During a Sunday morning service, a woman had received a miraculous healing in her body, and so she decided she was going to write the pastor about it to tell him about her experience. And as she closed out this letter, she said, "Reverend, do you think that God could possibly do something about my weight problem?" And so he wrote back to her and said, "My dear sister, this kind can only come out by fasting." We're talking about fasting. Last week, we looked at an Old Testament passage to gain an understanding of God's attitude toward fasting and what he desires to see accomplished through this discipline. And what we discovered is that God is primarily concerned that our hearts be turned toward him when we fast. It's a time to seek his face and to be captured by his spirit. And as we do this, we find that he moves us to a place where he demonstrates his love and his character in practical ways through us. We are blessed and we become a blessing to others. This morning we're going to turn to the New Testament. We're going to take a look at Jesus' primary teaching on the subject of fasting as a kingdom principle. And what we're going to discover is that what Jesus has to teach on this subject is very similar to what we learned in the Old Testament last week. In fact, his teaching approach is almost identical to Isaiah's. Jesus begins by showing us the wrong way to fast, and then he contrasts this by telling us the right way to fast. And the point that he wants to make is very clear and very simple, and that is, fasting is not primarily concerned with the external act of fasting. And the reason that's so is because, well, those things can be fabricated very easily. They can be counterfeited. You can make it look good. Rather, what Jesus wants to teach in this passage is that fasting is a normal discipline focused on encountering God, and that it is to be completely directed toward him. So, if you have your bulletins there, you can see a little outline on the back. We're going to be looking at Matthew chapter 6. And just three verses, verses 16 through 18. Jesus said these words, "When you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show others they are fasting. Truly I tell you, they have received their reward in full. But when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face, so that it will not be obvious to others that you are fasting, but only to your Father who is unseen. And your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you." It's the whole thing. Again, as I said, like the passage from Isaiah last week, Jesus begins his teaching on fasting by drawing our attention to the wrong way to fast. D.A. Carson writes, "Jesus is interested in condemning the abuses of the practice and in exposing the dangers." So Jesus' purpose here in bringing out the negative first is to accentuate then the positive. So he's going to be a big contrast. The manner in which Jesus helps his audience truly grasp what he is saying is by inviting them to take a look at a contemporary example of fasting that they were all familiar with, and that was the example of what he calls here the hypocrites. The word hypocrite is used by Jesus in the sense of a play actor, like the actors in the Greek and Roman plays who wore these exaggerated masks to present their message to the audience. So he's setting them up this way. And Matthew Henry writes in his commentary, "The hypocrites pretending or pretended fasting when there was nothing of the contrition or humiliation of soul in them, which is the life and soul of the duty. Theirs were mock fasts, the show and the shadow without the substance. They took on them to be more humbled than really they were, and so endeavored to put a cheat on God. Now, you may recall that part of God's indictment against the people of Judah in the message last week was that they were attempting to deceive him through their fasting. And so Jesus is again picking up that same kind of a theme here. Now, there are many reasons why one might participate in a fast. However, if we are not careful, we may find that we are actually fasting for the wrong reasons. It's easier than you might imagine. See, we may believe that we are fasting for a noble, even a godly aim, when in fact, our fasting may have very little to do with God and the advancement of his kingdom on earth. It may sound like a fast. It may look like a right fast, but it turns out to be a wrong fast, a pretend fast. And I want to explore some of the reasons that people fast that really amount to fasting as a hypocrite. One of the reasons that a person might fast is to gain a sense of God's approval or self-approval afterwards. People think to themselves, oh, no, if I fast, God is then bound to take note of me, and he's going to give me two thumbs up. He's going to know that I'm a really serious Christian, not like some of these other people. He's certain to see what I'm doing. It's going to earn his respect, and I'm going to get that attaboy that I'm looking for. And unfortunately, there are a number of people who fast for this kind of a reason. They believe that by denying themselves of pleasurable, even necessary things, that they will ultimately succeed in attaining God's smile. I just want God's smile. Acquiring God's smile then leads them to feeling good about themselves. However, this is really nothing short of a resurrection of asceticism. And for those who may be unfamiliar with this term, asceticism means practicing a strict self-discipline as a measure of personal or especially a spiritual discipline. So I'm going to punish myself, and then God's going to take note, and he's going to reward me. Friends, let this sink in. Really let it sink in if it has never sunk into your life before. God is smiling at you. Did you hear me? I heard one person heard me. God is smiling at you. You don't have to do anything to get God to like you. He is our Heavenly Father. He takes delight in his children. We don't have to try to gain his approval. We've already got it. So I'm saying to you, don't use fasting or anything else for that matter to try to gain God's approval. Live like you're loved, because you are. Well, that's one reason. Then there are those who fast in order to fulfill a religious act. Perhaps it is to fulfill a promise that they made to God. Maybe it's part of just a systematic religious ritual that they go through, maybe annually, maybe monthly, some weekly. They're simply going through the motions of a fast, and the act of fasting becomes the only real end in mind here. We saw last week, this is exactly what the people of Judah were guilty of. They had all of the outward actions right. They bowed their heads. They put on sackcloth and ashes. They offered petitions up to God. And Presumably, they went without food, but it never went beyond the external show. There was no corresponding internal change. There was really no seeking after God. Their fasting was, again, nothing more than a hollow religious activity, an empty shell. And fasting of this sort will always result in receiving this kind of response from God, which we saw in the passage. Isaiah 58, verse 5 says, "Is that what you call a fast? A day acceptable to the Lord." So we don't want to just do it just to do it. Still others fast in order to gain what we might call spiritual notoriety. They're looking to gain the attention of others, especially in religious circles. This, again, is the chief charge that Jesus is bringing against the hypocrites of his day. He says there it was not the deed, but it was the reputation of the deed which they sought. They disfigure their faces so that people will notice. Carson observes, "What began as a spiritual discipline was prostituted into an occasion for pompous self-righteousness. What was once a sign of humiliation became a sign of self-righteous self-display." I want to just take a few more moments and look more closely at this precarious goal of fasting for recognition. I want to give you some of the inherent dangers of doing this. One of the dangers of fasting for recognition is that of a feeling of being super spiritual. We can come away thinking that we can deceive ourselves into believing that somehow we have reached a higher spiritual level than others because we fast and they do not. We become spiritual snobs. We look down on those who haven't arrived yet. But this is so contrary, again, to the purpose of fasting. Fasting emphasizes the denial of the flesh, but people who are going, trying to make a name for themselves, they're really just glorifying their flesh by drawing attention to themselves. They're saying, "Look at me. Don't you wish you were close to God like me? Don't you wish you were me?" So that's one of the dangers. Closely related to this danger of feeling super spiritual is then of becoming self-confident. Self-confident or overconfident. That is, we start to put our confidence in ourselves and in our activities for God rather than in our relationship to God. Make an exchange here. We are finally consumed by overconfidence. We end up inflating ourselves to the point that we can become even larger than God. We'll swallow that lie that we find ourselves without need. And we view ourselves then without fault. In Luke chapter 18, verses 9 through 14, we read this chilling reminder of the results of overconfidence. Luke writes, "To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else, Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee, the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed, 'God, I thank you that I am not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week, and I give a tenth of all that I get.' But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but he beat his breast and said, 'God, have mercy on me, a sinner.'" And Jesus concludes this way, "I tell you that this man, the tax collector, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted." Third danger of fasting for recognition which Jesus explicitly mentions, that of changing one's appearance and actions. Jesus describes the hypocrites of his day as individuals who disfigure their faces to show others that they're fasting. And their fasting amounted to nothing more than an exaggerated exhibition aimed at drawing attention to themselves. Well, verse 16 then concludes with Jesus talking about receiving a reward. And what does he say is a reward of fasting the wrong way? Plain and simple. You gain human recognition and esteem. You gain human recognition and esteem. This word translated have received in verse 16 is used in Hellenistic Greek in the receipting of bills, and it indicates that their payment has been received in full. This is it. That's all of it. John Piper, in his book, A Hunger for God, comments, if the reward you aim for at, or aim at in fasting is the admiration of others, that is what you will get, and that will be all that you get. In other words, the danger of hypocrisy is that it is so successful. It aims at the praise of men, and it succeeds. But that's all. Now, turning our attention to verses 17 and 18, Jesus instructs his listeners on how to fast the right way. And I really appreciate William Barclay's introductory comments on these verses. He writes, although Jesus condemned the wrong kind of fasting, his words imply that there is a wise fasting in which he expected that Christians would take part. This is a thing of which few of us ever think. There are very few ordinary people in whose lives fasting plays any part at all. And yet, there are many reasons why a wise fasting is an excellent thing. Now, before we look at Jesus' instructions on fasting the right way, I want to remind you of the description of true fasting that I gave you last week. I said, true fasting is a physical declaration of our intense desire to have God build his faith in us for the express purpose of seeing his kingdom released on the earth. And with that description in mind, let's consider Jesus' perspective on fasting the right way. Well, the first thing that Jesus points out about right way to fast is that it should be seen as a normal discipline. It is a normal discipline. Verse 17 begins, but when you fast. Notice he uses the word when, not if. But when you fast. Dietrich Bonhoeffer remarks, Jesus takes it for granted that disciples will keep the pious practice or exercise of fasting. See, one of the reasons that Jesus took the time to teach on the subject of fasting is because he expected his disciples to participate in this discipline, that it would become a normal part of their spiritual journey. Now, I'm not going to say any more about that aspect of the right way to fast right now because I'm going to deal with that in greater detail in the couple of follow-up messages that are coming. So this is kind of like baiting you and saying you need to come back if you want to see what it has to say here. So anyway, sorry. So that was one. Not only are we to fast as a normal discipline, but Jesus goes on to say that we are to do it in such a way that our participation in fasting takes place without special notice. So no special notice. Verse 18 states, so that it will not be obvious to others that you are fasting. That is to say, in contrast to the hypocrites, Jesus is saying that the citizens of the kingdom that he is establishing were to fast in such a way that it would not draw attention to themselves. Now, Craig Keener notes in his commentary that Jewish fasting required the abstinence, not only from food, but also from other pleasures, which would include the usual practice of anointing one's head with oil to prevent the skin from becoming dry, and avoiding all the practices made fasting obvious. So in Jewish practice, they were supposed to do this. So it should not surprise us, though, that Jesus would tell his disciples, his followers, to act in a way that was contrary to the accepted Jewish norm. His purpose throughout the Sermon on the Mount, of which this passage is a part, was to dispel the popular interpretations of the law and then to expose again the heart of God in giving the law in the first place. So he knew that the hypocrites had merely seized the letter of the law as an opportunity to promote themselves, whereas citizens of his kingdom were not to draw attention to themselves, but to fast in order to seek God's face. Final thing Jesus tells us about the right way to fast is that it should be done to God alone. He says here, but only to your Father who is unseen. Remember, our description of a true fast is that it is a physical declaration of our intense desire to have God build his faith in us for the express purpose of seeing his kingdom then released on the earth. So from start to finish, the focus of fasting is to have an encounter with God. We fast in order to know God, to know his will, with the intention then of acting upon what he reveals to us. Just as in the case of wrong fasting, Jesus concludes his instructions on fasting with on how to fast the right way with mentioning a reward. And what is the reward of fasting the right way? Listen to Jesus' answer. It says, and your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. Now, I know that answer sounds pretty vague, right? Kind of open there. Well, I believe what Jesus is promising is that God takes notice of our fasting and he generously rewards it. How? By showing up. God shows up. I want to remind you of this promise from God found in Jeremiah 29, verse 13. It says, you will seek me and you will find me when you seek me with all of your heart. You see, when our objective in fasting is to seek to know God himself and then to align ourselves with his will and with his kingdom purposes, we are guaranteed to be rewarded. We will find God. God will show up. Verses we looked at today, Jesus contrasts wrong fasting with right fasting. Fasting the right way involves doing it as a normal discipline without special notice and to God alone. Now I'm going to close with a disclaimer here. And the disclaimer is this. When we choose to fast the way that Jesus teaches us to, it is likely that we will not receive any acclaim or praise from others. In fact, some may even ridicule us for fasting, view us as fanatics or legalistic. We may be considered as propagating an outdated mode of meeting with God that he no longer requires or even looks upon with favor. Here's what I want to say. Regardless of the way that others view us, when we fast, we have the word of our Lord that true fasting is rewarded by him. Now, as I've often said at the close of a message, I will say again this morning, don't take my word for all of this. I really encourage you, take the time to search out the scriptures on your own. Diligently seek out God in this matter. Allow him to direct you. And then be obedient to what he shows you. When we were meeting together in our little Koinonia group, it just came up in passing sometimes think of things that we'd like to talk about later in the week. The pastor said something here, but I'd really like to ask him about that. Well, I want to open up an opportunity here, and we'll just see how this goes or whatever. But I'm going to start showing up at the grill on Wednesday mornings. I don't know, 8-ish, something like that. And if you have questions that come up in your mind after we've met together like this and you'd just like to talk about them, or if you have other spiritual issues you'd like to just come together and meet, I want to be like in like a little place there where we can have a little breakfast club and hang out and talk about things. So I just want to say that, leave it open there. In the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be doing more practical aspects of fasting, getting into some of the nitty-gritty. I'm going to try to answer the questions, who, what, where, when, why, and how of fasting. Maybe you have some questions. You want to make sure that I'm going to address those questions. Send me an email. Stop by the office. See me on Wednesday. Whatever. I'm trying to give you some opportunities here. I want to participate. I want to be involved in your lives. And I want to see God's kingdom grow here. So, anyway. That's it.